Well, as many of you know, I left for the Bahamas last Monday. I got back on Thursday. Flew over to Nassau and then went into Marsh Harbor. I couldn't believe the destruction in Marsh Harbor. I mean, it was hard for me to even fathom. I mean, it literally looked like Aleppo or something out of a World War II movie where they just come and strifed, you know, and the buildings were. The roads were cleared, but I mean, it was just unbelievable. I mean, the destruction, seeing, you know, a freighter that's probably a good tenth of a mile from water sitting on top of a building, you know, boats all over, everything's broken up. Things are just there. I mean, it was as though, you know, the roads got cleared, but nothing else really has gotten a whole lot done. I started to think about that term. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, how many times do we say something's unbelievable? Do we mean that, or do we mean it was disbelievable? And what does that mean? Belief. Is it where we see it and we can't sort of process it? Or is it where we see something and we say how bad it is, and so we say, well, I don't want to believe this. I remember what it was. How can it be this now? Believable, unbelievable, disbelievable. You know, I started to think about that when I looked at the scriptures for today. And to be real honest with you, these scriptures are interesting scriptures, because it's a story of Jesus talking to the Sadducees. Now, let me give you a little background on the Sadducees if you don't know already. The Sadducees were one, you could call it a sect, you could call it a party, you could call it, you know, just one section of the Jewish population. There were Pharisees, there were Essenes, there were Sadducees, there were Herodians, there were Zealots. They were all different sort of factions that sort of took on things in a different way. The Sadducees were very specific. They were probably more upper middle class, and they were people who only believed in the first five books of the Old Testament. In other words, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. They held to Moses' teaching. That was Moses' teaching, and that's all they listened to. They didn't listen to the prophets at all, and they somewhat cooperated a little bit more, probably, because they were on an affluent level, with the Roman authorities. And so they were not seen as, by at least the Pharisees, as pure as the Pharisees were. Of course, do you ever notice that? You know, when we look at somebody else from a different sect or different policy, they aren't as together as we are, you know? Well, the Sadducees, you know, sort of looked at the Pharisees the same way. But the Sadducees, who, you know, wanted to sort of talk to Jesus about things, because they did not believe in the resurrection. They didn't believe that there was a resurrection. It didn't happen. When you died, you went to Sheol. You either went to Gehenna, which is the bad place, or you went to the bosom of Abraham, which was the good place. But you didn't sort of resurrect. There was no such thing, because they didn't think it was in the law of Moses. Well, they come to talk to Jesus. Now, it doesn't say in this that they were trying to entrap Jesus, because whether Jesus had a different opinion of them wouldn't have mattered, because they wouldn't have been able to prosecute anything. It didn't matter to the Romans what you believed, okay? But they come and ask Jesus, and they make up that story that I just read to you about, you know, seven brothers, and one's married, and, you know, marries a woman, but she's left childless, and the law of Moses says that if you are married and you have a wife, but you're childless, then, to be honest with you, your brother has to marry the woman so that to provide children, you know, for the brother that's dead, so that he can raise up. Well, he goes through seven people, and, you know, she basically gets seven married to seven brothers, and none of them are childless. You know, you'd think they'd figure out a problem there. But, you know, and I started to look at that with belief, and I thought to myself, you know, what's going on here? How's this going on here? In the middle of me trying to figure out what I was going to preach on, because to be up front with you, I was in the Bahamas till Thursday. This was Friday. I had a funeral yesterday in Orlando, so I knew I only had this little bit of time to really prepare. So if I don't make any sense, just blow it off and say, I have Spencer again. I don't care. But in the middle of the whole preparation time, I'm starting to, and a friend of mine calls. It's a woman I've known for 40 years, and she called up, and in the midst of the conversation, she'd been married to her husband for 53 years. I know them both. They're really good folks. But she started complaining about her husband. I mean, she started complaining about her husband, and I'm sitting there saying, I got to get this work done. I got a funeral tomorrow. I mean, that's all gone on my head, but I had to seem like I was really listening to her, you know. And so I'm listening and listening, and finally she said, you know, he just is, I just don't understand what's going. I mean, they've been married 53 years, you know. I think by then you get it, maybe, but maybe not. And then all of a sudden, I didn't know what to say. So all of a sudden, I looked at her. I said to her over the phone, I said, those who belong to this age, marrying or given in marriage, but those who are considered worthy of a place in that age in the resurrection from the dead, neither marry nor are given in marriage. Indeed, they cannot die anymore because they are like angels and children of God. I said, you got something going for you now. Don't worry about it. When you get into the resurrection, there's no more marriage. You're good to go. Now, that had nothing to do with the sermon. But the truth of the matter is this. When you look at these scriptures, what is it trying to do? What's it trying to get apart? That the Sadducees and Jesus didn't agree? Or a teaching on living? Or a teaching on what? Or is it a teaching, in a sense, on those words that I just said before? Unbelief, disbelief, or belief? Unbelief, disbelief, or belief. The reason why the Sadducees couldn't believe in the resurrection was because the way they read the books of Moses was they didn't think it said that in there. They couldn't see beyond what they had read to a possibility beyond what their frame of reference was. I wonder how many times we get like that. We get locked in. Hey, it's been that way. Here's the practicality. This is the facts. This is the way I read the facts. And the facts say, that can't happen. And we stop ourselves from moving beyond where we are because, to tell you the truth, the system we work within, the mindset that we have, somehow stops us. Did you ever wonder if maybe the reason why sometimes you have things that you want to believe or that you see in front of you that other people might believe, the reason why you can't go on is because the own system that you have worked out over your own experience says, well, that can't happen. It's not going to happen that way. You see, we're supposed to be lived by faith, aren't we, as Christians? I mean, that's what we're supposed to live by. Live by faith, to see beyond what is to what can be. To go into situations that seem like they're destroyed all the way where it looks like Aleppo and say, you know what? We can make something out of this. Somehow we can move forward in this. Somehow, even though it's so negative all around me, I can see light at the end of the tunnel. But it takes faith, believing in the unseen and having eyes of Christ to move you beyond that place. You see, we all have to grow into our faith. And believe it or not, whether you like it or not, you know, your whole life is all about learning how to live and how to have faith. You go through it every day. There are certain things that you have to die to at times where you practice dying now in a small way so that you can practice living in a bigger way. But knowing that I'm practicing dying because sooner or later I'm going to get to that thing that we really mean by death. And so that I'm ready to go through it. And so you die to yourself. I mean, how many of you, this is not, maybe not on you, this would be on me. But you know, my ego is huge. And I got to die to my own ego a lot. Where I say, it's really all about me. And then all of a sudden I find, it's nothing about me. And I got to die to myself so that I can get away from that stuff that's killing me so that I can live more freely and live more into faith than I've ever done before. To go beyond where I see. I'll be real upfront with you. You know, when I got over there and I looked at all the destruction, and I mean, it was incredible. And I looked at some of the folks that were there and said, you know what? I mean, here's a statistic on Great Guana. Over 70% of the people on Great Guana had no insurance. No insurance, nothing. I talked to a woman, Tammy, who actually is running the command center in Great Guana. I mean, she's a fantastic woman. I had her on the phone 3 days ago, and she was crying. She goes, you know, I lost my house. I lost my retirement because I had this other house that I was going to rent out for my retirement. It's gone. My house is gone. I'm in my 60s. I got to start over again. You know, I mean, what do you say to somebody like that? 53 out of the 88 houses on Great Gowan are gone. What do you say to these people like that? But most of the people that I've met there, which primarily were first time, you know, I mean, they were residents. They weren't second homes over there. Every one of them pretty much said, no, I'm sticking it out. I'm going to make it. We're going to do it. I was with this guy, Jimmy Aubrey, who the Aubrey family is huge in the Bahamas. They, you know, they have the taxi service, the water taxi service and all that. They owned the sail shop, his original family. Jimmy's grandparents, his mom actually ran the sail shop in Man of War, which is a landmark. I've never been to Man of War, so I'm talking through my head. I don't have a clue, but that's what I was told. And Jimmy, one night late, he said, you know, I'm sitting there talking to him on the front porch of my buddy's house, and he's telling me the stories, and he goes, you know what, I mean, the United States Coast Guard really did us right. They came in here. But really, since that's gone, he goes, there's not been much activity. We have food to eat, but how are we going to rebuild? How are we going to move beyond? We don't have insurance. I mean, he's one of the owners of Orchid Bay. Orchid Bay had no insurance. And he goes, I've done it before. I've been in hurricanes fours and fives. We just lived through them, and we went through it. We lost stuff. We lost a sail shop one time, but we got it back. We just kept on doing it. We just put one foot in front of the other. And God somehow in the midst of this is going to teach me to get through this one. But this one was a big. It wasn't a four or a five. It was a seven. 220-mile-an-hour wind straight on. It was crazy. And then he started to well up. He goes, but somehow, you know, people show up. You and Mark, you showed up. You know, somehow in the midst of it, you look for that stuff. You don't look for the stuff that's negative. You look at the stuff where God's at work, not at the stuff where, in a sense, the evil has persisted. And you don't get hung up on the drama of it all. You just put one foot in front of the other. And bit by bit, little by little, you move down the road. You get down to the road to where all of a sudden you have a sense of knowing, wait a second, faith is there. God is there. God is good. Life is tough. But I know, without a shadow of a doubt, Jimmy said, he goes, I know God's going to rebuild it, and it's not going to get back the way it was. It's going to get back better. It's going to get better. I mean, the trip that we had was incredibly successful. I'll be up front with you. We got over there. I mean, when I left last week, I think I said, we got a shot at this matching grant, you know, for an incinerator. It's called an air burner. It was $120,000 plus, you know, anything else that we have to do to get them trained to know how to do it. And when we got over there, all of a sudden, bit by bit, and we're like this much away from getting it signed. Everything's been through the committees for Tavistock's Bahama One Fund for a matching grant. And we're, I mean, all it has to do is be signed off on by, you know, the main board, but all the research is done for a matching grant for this thing. And it's all there. And all of a sudden, you know, we were working the phones while we were over there and talking to people. And I think we're almost to the point where we've got everything matched that we need to do. So that's $130,000 in 4 days, where all of a sudden we're going to have something comes. And it doesn't just fix the problem now. It fixed the problem actually for down the road. I mean, what I didn't realize is that all the garbage from Great Gowana gets shipped on a boat over to Marsh Harbor and then taken care of. And so each business owner has to pay like $260 a month or $360 a month to get their garbage taken care of. This incinerator, in the long run, won't just take care of the debris that's there, and it burns everything. It'll take care of the garbage they have down the road, so all of a sudden there's another industry there. We're sitting there, and we had to work out, well, where's this thing going to go? We talked to the people at Orchid Bay. We'll give you some land. 2 years guaranteed, and then we'll negotiate after that, but we'll probably keep going. Then we started saying, how are we going to ship it? How are we going to get it there? Two organizations came. Baker's Bay came up, and you know who else came up? Your buddy came up. He came up. Wharton Smith said, we'll take care of it. So we have ways of getting it there. And this all fell into line. It was incredible the way it came together. To me, that was an act of faith. That was where God all of a sudden took nothing and turn something into it, because a whole lot of people came together and took one step forward and kept on moving. And as I put it, you know, maybe we did some spiritual chiropractic because we aligned the spirit up again. And we got over there, and it was so exciting to see the changes. Anybody that you talk to that stayed through the storm wells up. Anybody that's there, they talk about how they're out during the eye of the storm trying to get there, but they didn't. Some of them didn't make it in time to the next house they were trying to get to, and they felt their child that they were holding on to getting pulled away by the storm, and then somebody grabbed them and got them in. No lives were lost on Great Guano. So here's the question I have for you. Why is it so easy sometimes to believe, even though things are so overwhelming, that something can be done and you can make it get done, but why is it so hard on the small stuff? You know, the little stuff. You know, that started to kick my tail while I was over there. And I kept on saying, why is it I can believe that this has all come together and we're all celebrating because we got this one thing? And actually, in the last service, I kept on getting texts because now the guys I'm working with were working on front-end loaders and skid steers and all this other stuff that we got to get over there. And things are starting to fall. I mean, literally, in the last hour, I got another guy that called up and said, I want to get $20,000 towards a front-end loader. I mean, where all of a sudden starts coming. But why is the small stuff so hard? You know, the small, the little stuff that kind of, you're dealing with health insurance companies. Why is it the little stuff? The big stuff seems like, well, if you fail, it's no big deal because you didn't expect to succeed. But the little stuff, you think, no, that's just irritation. It's kind of like a stone in your shoe, isn't it? You know, I started to think about that on the way home. And it was interesting because on the way home, we had to once again go by boat from Great Guana over to Marsh Harbor. Then we go into the airport in Marsh Harbor. There's no electricity there, so they're working off generators. And you basically sign through, and you got to go in and go out. I was trying to get my boarding pass because our flight out of Great Guana was at 9 o'clock. It's about a 28-minute flight to get over to Nassau. But then my flight, the doors closed on my flight at 11 o'clock. From Nassau to Orlando. And, you know, I was like, that's kind of tight, you know? I mean, I land, I got to go through. And I couldn't get a boarding pass because they wouldn't load up on my cell phone. You didn't have internet, you didn't have all that stuff. So I got there, and I'm trying to get the boarding pass. Can't do it when we're in Marsh Harbor. I get on the plane, we fly there, and I said, well, I guess I got to go to the JetBlue counter. I get to the kiosk first to get it because that's what they tell you to do. The kiosks didn't work. So I get in line, and darn, if there isn't like 20 families with 30 people in each family, that's an exaggeration, but it seemed like that, in front of me. And I'm sitting there like looking at my watch thinking, gotta move, I gotta go, how am I gonna do this, blah, 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 you know. And finally I get up there and they give me my boarding pass, and then I run through and I'm going through figuring I can get my stuff. I have no bags, I mean, I'm just got a carry-on, and I'm getting there, and all of a sudden I didn't realize, and for those of you who've traveled to Nassau, you understand this, but I didn't know this, U.S. Customs in Nassau is in the Nassau airport, okay? So that means I got to go through immigration and customs for the U.S. I hadn't banked on that. And I get to the place where it is, and I'm looking at my watch, and I'm like, the doors close at 11. It's now 20 to 25 minutes after 10. And I see this long line. I felt like I was either at Disney in peak season, or I was on I-4, like at, you know, like 7:30 in the morning on the way to Orlando. You know, so then I start sizing it up. I don't know about you, but, you know, when I'm on I-4 and I'm in a risk, you know, I mean, you're driving in this, well, this lane seems it's going fast, so I'm in here, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, it's in this lane, it's faster, I'm there. Oh, I see them going faster, so I'm back here, you know, and I'm trying to jump from thing. People are irritated at me. I'm bumping into folks. My buddy Mark's with me, who's going to Grand Rapids. He's going, what are you doing? You know, and finally we're up there. I kept looking at my phone, and I mean, I'm looking at the time, and we go through the line. Finally, I'm right in the front line, the next immigration officer's on. They had two immigration officers against it. Let me tell you something. I was praying on my prayer hit list. They're on there. And I'm standing there, and all of a sudden, I look at Mark, and I'm thinking, well, I should be nice. So I look at Mark, and I say, do you want to go first? And he looks at me, and he goes, you're the one so worried. You ought to go first. And all of a sudden, it hit me. I said, why? I have got no faith. Where's my faith? I mean, where is my faith? Where'd it go? We just did a deal getting something that we said we couldn't do. We got it there. And yet, and I'm believing that even though it's physically not there, I know it's going to be there within weeks. And here I'm thinking, God can't get me through immigration. Where's my faith? Where was it? Where'd it go? It was because everything factually said, I can't make this. The number came on for me to go to immigration officer number 2, and 2 and 10 were the only ones working. So I go over to immigration number 2, I throw my stuff up on there, and he looks at me and he goes, what were you here for? And I said, I'm visiting a friend for some damage up in Guana. And he goes, okay. Do you know that? And then he starts this conversation with me. And he goes, do you know that gold coins from Guana have arrived in Nassau and they're selling them and they're not sure? And I looked down and I said, I don't know anything about that. Can I go? And he goes, yeah, go ahead. I got there about 1 minute till 11. But I got there. And I'm waiting to get on. I was in E boarding, so I wasn't the first one. And dang, that didn't happen. As I stood there waiting to get on while everybody else is moving forward, if my buddy Mark, who was right behind me, came by with a bag of Wendy's and said, I told you to make it on time, I got lunch. And he walked down and got on his plane. My point in saying this is, why is it so hard to have faith? Why is it so hard to believe? Why is it so hard to not look beyond what you have? It's because we shut ourselves down by worry, by our own sense of control, by our own sense of thinking, God can't do it without fitting into my parameter. Let me tell you something right now and make this clear. God's parameters are a lot better and a lot bigger than your parameters. And until you set aside your own parameters, your own sense of, well, this isn't going to work, you'll never get beyond where you are. And God doesn't want you to live there. The God that you have is a loving God that will guide you, lead you, give you the next step forward, and will get you to the places that you need to be, and will raise you up every step of the way. And yes, you might stumble. And yes, you may have to wait for a flight. And yes, you may miss a flight or lose a bag. But the reality is, he will always get you there, because that's the kind of God that we've got. A God that is bigger than we can possibly imagine. As you come to the Eucharist this day, I pray that you realize that he's with you. And as you go out of here, I hope you realize even more that he goes with you out there. Because that's really where faith works and is needed. In here, not so much. But out there, that's where you learn whether you are in disbelief or unbelief, or faith that is limited or faith that is free. It's in the name of Jesus that we pray. Amen.